Time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were on your phone.
Yeah, okay? I was just checking my messages.
Is everything all right?
Yeah. You know, people want me to DJ their weddings on my wedding day.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it?
No. And then people want me to DJ the day before, which is the wife of the party's birthday, and then the day after.
Do you want me to do it?
I could hire you for a couple of gigs.
Please.
Okay.
I need money bad.
But not on my wedding day.
No.
Okay.
Unless I can work it in that I could be there both.
Yeah, that might work.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think so. Am I going to be invited to the religiously affiliated ceremony?
Yeah, because this is the cultural hall.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what that people don't know what that's all about.
Well, I asked that question and then I went, I can't remember if Rob's getting sealed in the temple or not.
Probably.
Yeah, probably you are.
Yeah, I just had, we have a bishop meeting tonight.
Oh, so we're going to know for sure.
Yeah. She doesn't have she's not endowed.
Uh-huh.
So she's kind of been nervous about that. I think it's nerve-wracking for anybody who hasn't gone through the temple for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I would think so, wouldn't you think?
It was for me, for sure. What very about good. For you?
It was not very nerve-wracking, just kind of like the mystery of it all.
Right, the unknown. Oh my gosh, I don't know what they do, but I've heard.
Yes, exactly.
The bigger thing for me was when I got down, I went, wait.
What?
I'm going to have to do this again, because there's something I'm, you know, what is all this?
Yeah. Especially if you go through the Salt Lake City Temple.
Because of the live session.
It's a live session with old people playing Adam and Eve.
Yeah. And Satan.
Hmm.
It's pretty interesting.
Michael Ballum.
Yeah, we talked about him in the Articles of News most recently, too.
Yeah.
Because he went to jail.
What?
Listen to Articles of News. Yeah, if you haven't listened to it, yeah, went to jail.
Wow.
So what are you doing to help her through that? Because that's a big deal. That's pretty intimidating.
So here's the thing. We've been to temple prep class. She's been to different temple prep classes in different wards.
Because she's 32. Okay.
Yeah. And so she's had good experiences in others. The one in our ward, dry, lame. Very,
not so great.
Not so great. And she has friends who've been through. And so she talks to her friends, girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
and they're comforting to her because these girls can kind of put it in perspective in a different way.
Well, and I think there's something about that you've been through and can be a friend and be like, listen, I went through. I didn't understand everything. I'm still good.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Kind of be mm-hmm. an example as far as that goes.
Yep.
So is there a plan for that? When is she doing that? You got to go meet tonight? Is that
We're thinking the first time. She won't, her mom really wants to be there for one of them, but mm-hmm. She doesn't want to do it the first time with her mom.
Sure.
Probably go through a session later on with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll probably go through with a couple of her girlfriends.
Are you going to be there for the first time?
I don't know.
That's kind of a thing, huh?
I know. Yeah. Kind of interesting.
My immediate thought would be let her kind of do it herself.
That's fine with me.
But if she asked you to be there, you'd be there.
Yeah.
But this is all skirting around the question, am I invited to be there in the...
Yes. Okay. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, I didn't know.
Yeah.
You hadn't said I need...
Yeah.
What time? Do we know when that is? I need to make time.
Yeah. So people are going to start showing up outside the temple. These listeners are like, I wonder... Oh,
is that Rob? Rob! Rob! It's the royal baby!
It's the royal baby. What's interesting is I run into people who listen to the podcast, and they're like, hey, are you Rob? Hey, are you Rob?
Are you DJ Rob?
Yeah. It's interesting. And then they recognize the voice and everything, so...
Your melodic, dulcet tunes.
My voice that sounds like a ma'am when I call customer service.
Sorry, ma'am.
How can I help you, ma'am?
Shut up! I'm a dude!
But,
you don't have to tell me time.
Afternoon.
Okay, that's all I needed to know.
A couple hours before the actual reception, so.
And we got to do a Mormon bachelor party, too.
Yeah, we can't do it Friday night. We're maybe Thursday night.
I don't think you get a pick. I think we plan it, and then you have to be there.
Yeah, you and Britt.
Yeah, your bachelors.
Yeah, two dudes.
It's going to be the craziest night in Wendover ever.
Actually, I have a week, but it's in August. Dang it. I have free night in Wendover.
Really?
Yeah. I bought it at like a silent auction.
Awesome. Maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, but it has to be in August.
That's fine.
You guys want to go?
We'll just do it a month early.
Okay.
Now people are going to start lining up in Wendover. Is that DJ Rob? Hey, happy wedding.
I think that'd be fun.
Going to Wendover for a night?
Yeah.
I'd do it.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
And then...
Wait, what do you want to do? Because the Mormon bachelor party is always kind of like, hey, do you remember when we thought we could drink and do, you know?
Yeah, it's just kind of sitting around reminiscing, having fun, going to some restaurant. I think a couple of gifts would be in order. I always like gifts.
Yeah.
Like funny gifts.
Okay, so you want a funny gift?
Yeah, like a, hey, look, these are sex dice.
Nice. I think I'm going to give you cash.
Aw. I want sex dice.
Really?
Yeah, I think that'd be funny.
I'm going to get you
like I would use them.
Like the most mild sex dice ever.
Spoon.
Hug.
Spoon her face. You know, because what it is, it's an action and a body part.
Yeah.
So you roll it. Yeah, it's like all spoon. These,
her ankle.
Spoon her ankle. That's awkward.
There's got to be modest dice.
Caress neck. Oh, okay.
Oh, your neck.
Very good. Very good. We should make those. Cultural Hall modest sex dice. They're not called sex dice.
No, they're called S-word dice.
They're called wedding night dice. We can call them that.
It doesn't have to be on the wedding night, Rob. Oh, okay. Some people don't on the wedding night.
How about being intimate dice?
Yeah, intimacy dice.
Intimacy dice. There you go. I think we should do that.
Okay.
At our Cultural Hall store, which we still need to make.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
You know, if you go to theculturalhall.com on the right-hand side, it says you can subscribe to our newsletter.
Okay.
Well, when I subscribed to the newsletter, it sent me an email that said, you're now subscribed.
Yes.
And so I thought when other people subscribe to the newsletter that it would also send me an email saying, hey, so-and-so has subscribed to the newsletter. So I haven't been making a newsletter.
Okay.
We've got like 100 people who have subscribed to the newsletter.
And you haven't made
one. And I haven't made one because I didn't know that there were people there. So.
How many subscribers?
100.
Okay.
So I'm going to start doing a newsletter. We're going to assign a newsletter person.
Okay.
And it'll go out once a month until we need it to go out once a week.
And in that newsletter, we'll probably talk about upcoming events.
Yeah.
Like we've had so many. Actually, we have a dream to do a live podcast. And I think it'd be awesome to do it for the 100th podcast.
Yeah. Let's just do it.
That's what I want to do.
100th will be live.
We'll do a live podcast and then maybe have a musical guest.
Sure.
And then do live. And then we can take questions from the audience.
I love it.
So, and we want to feature all the panel members. So
feature all the panel members.
So they can see what they look like.
Perfect.
How does that sound, folks?
That sounds great.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Oh, the one guy in the back.
That way. Oh, my gosh, there's that one guy. No. So coming up in the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall, you know what this is?
What have we got?
It's Dallin Weeks. Do you know who that is?
Dallin Weeks. He's from, he's Hillary Weeks' brother.
Okay, good guess, but not the case. He is the lead singer of a band called the Brobecks and the bassist of the band Panic at the Disco.
Oh, okay.
Which just released a new single just like last week, and it's awesome. If you look very briefly in the music video, you can see him. But he's there. He's the bassist. He's the man. It's coming up in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall, Mr. Dallin Weeks.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining me from California, some part, where are you?
Simi Valley,
California. It's Dallin Weeks of Panic at the Disco and the Brobecks, and I'm giddy like I'm giddy like a 14-year-old girl.
Well, join the club. I feel the same way about what I do. So, it's a you know, welcome to it's good to have you.
Yeah, it's good to have me in the group that idolize you. Now, let me just to give a little background here, Dallin. I don't listen to CDs, which is kind of a weird thing, right? Because I work for radio as my day job. I do this show as kind of an aside, but I don't listen to CDs because it feels like work. It feels like I'm at work if I'm listening to CDs.
I can understand that. I don't really ever listen to CDs unless I'm in my car going somewhere.
But even
I'll still listen to music a lot though.
Yeah, no, I'll flip through radio stations and truthfully, I'm a huge fan of just kind of that smooth kind of like dental office, you know, kind of, you know, you're non-threatening. No, not Muzak, because it's actually music, but it was music that was cool 15 years ago.
Oh, okay. Your Mariah Carey's and your Michael Bolton's.
Yeah, I listen to that stuff, and not because I like it, because it feels so much different from my day job that it's like, oh, okay, I'm listening, and, you know, these are hit songs of their time, and it's just a break for me. But
yeah, I can understand that. If you spend all day doing something that's kind of a bummer to go home and still be around that sort of stuff and never really get a break from it. So yeah, I understand what you're saying.
But here is the exception. Are you ready for this? I have the latest The Vices and Virtues, Panic at the Disco, which is the only CD that I have in my car.
Well, right on, man. Good choice.
And I'm not lying, and that's not anything as far as, you know, oh, I'm going to tell him this so that this interview will go well and he'll open up. No, it's just the truth. I listen to it and I crank it and I go, how come this one never made the radio? Why did we never play this one? This is a great song.
Well, from what I remember hearing about your car, you keep quite a few things in there. Yeah. So.
My car is my, but you're the only CD, so take that.
Oh, all right.
There's also only one ape suit in my car. There's also only one complete ski outfit, and I also have only one going swimming outfit all in my car. But those things are important to have too.
Quite a collection.
Well, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. Hey, you want to go skiing? You know, it's like, hey, you want to go skiing? Well, I don't want to have to drive home. So I have it. Is that your boy in the background?
Yep, he's doing his thing downstairs.
Nice. What's his name?
His name is Knox.
Knox is...
And then I've got a... Knox is two.
Okay.
And I have a four-year-old daughter named Amelie, but she goes to preschool during the day and stuff.
So. Very cool. So let's back it up a little bit. Dallin James Weeks, this is from your Wikipedia. Yep. He's an American musician. He is the bass guitarist and backing vocalist for Panic at the Disco, as well as the lead vocalist, bass guitarist, and singer-songwriter for his independent band, The Brobecks. And ladies, he's good-looking. This picture that you have on your Wikipedia.
That part's in there? That last part's in the Wikipedia?
Yeah. I just added it. That's the best part about Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
No, but I was looking at this your picture for this page. You look cool.
I haven't seen it in a while, so I hear that it changes from time to time. But.
Yeah, well, I'll edit it to one that looks less cool so I feel better about myself.
Yeah, I won't lie. I'm aware that there's a Wikipedia page about me.
I check it out. I Google myself every once in a while.
I've seen it.
Let's keep going into this. It says you were born in a small town in Missouri.
Yeah.
Close to a large Amish neighborhood. What's that? What town's that?
Verona is the name of the town. And my grandma and grandpa had a farm out there. And when my parents first got married, they moved out there and sort of tried to make it, you know.
But things are hard in Verona?
Early days. What's that?
I was going to say, but things are hard in Verona?
I guess so. I mean, I don't remember a lot about it because we moved when I was still super young, but we would go back and visit periodically as, you know, summer vacations and things like that. But yeah, heavily Amish community. Not a lot out there, so.
How was that?
Kind of glad we ended up in Utah.
How was that being amongst the Amish?
You know, like I said, I don't remember a lot, but whenever we would go back to visit and stuff, they would kind of be around, and, you know, you'd see them in their buggies and stuff, and they always seemed perfectly nice. Never had any, like, major interactions with them, but my cousins and my family out there would on a pretty regular basis, and, you know, said they're great people, so...
I served my mission in Cleveland, Ohio, and in one of the areas that we had there was a fairly Amish community, Middlefield, Ohio, and it's down kind of by a little bit of Kirtland, a little by Hiram, kind of out that way. And
I didn't know that there were much Amish in Ohio.
Oh yeah. And now I was going to say,
I'm not too familiar with Ohio, but I know that one of my favorite bands comes out of Cincinnati, Foxy Shazam. Killer.
You know, someone else was talking to us about Foxy Shazam just the other day as well. I can't remember. Anyway, I'll remember that and then throw it in as a non sequitur here.
Check them out. They're awesome for sure.
But you always hear stories about the Amish where it's like, well, I heard an Amish person one time, like, I don't know. I don't know why that even got brought up. Or like the Amish people who were kind of Amish, where it's like they're Amish on the upstairs, but you go in the basement and they got the large screen TV. And the, you know, the cable pumping in and their internet set up, and it's, you know, it's like two different worlds. I always thought that was fun.
Yeah.
Or the one missionary.
Well, you know, I think stories like that are pervasive with sort of any group of people. You know, well, I heard that they do this, you know, or whatever. It's always more fun and exciting to believe those kind of stories, but, you know, the reality is usually far less interesting. And
And that's why you got to perpetuate the lies. The urban. I'm kidding.
Right?
Now, so you moved out from Missouri here to Utah in, you were how old, you said?
I was still just a baby, so it was probably, I was probably 1 or 2 years old.
Okay.
But we grew up in, I grew up with my brother in Clearfield, Utah.
Okay.
So that's where I spent the majority of my life. So
went to Clearfield High School. That's up north. That's in Davis County, north of Salt Lake, for people who don't know. And then
Falcons.
And then it says that you went to Weber State for about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, it was longer than that. I did about 2 years at Weber State.
See, I love the way that
correctly.
You mentioned about how, yeah, things can get perpetuated or told incorrectly. Listen to how cool this sentence makes you sound. Ready? After graduating in 99 from Clearfield High School, Weeks attended Weber State for about 6 weeks before dropping out to serve as a missionary in Oklahoma for 2 years. You're like,
what?
I love it. It's like, nah, forget it. I'm going to go serve the Lord. I'm out of here.
No, I actually attended Weber State after I got back from my mission, so that's a little backwards.
See, I'm glad.
But,
I'm glad we're getting to the truth here.
Yeah, we pull up that edit page. Let's fix this stuff.
I'm working on it right now. Go ahead.
But no, after high school, I spent almost a year just kind of, you know, playing music and bumming around before my mission because I knew I was going to go.
How come?
So I was just kind of slacking, you know, until that time. Because before that, it was always school and work and never really got any time to do what I really wanted to do, which was music, you know. So I spent my time just kind of writing and playing in my band and recording stuff whenever the opportunity presented itself. And then went on my mission, and after that was done, then I went to school for about 2 years until I dropped out to kind of pursue music full time.
So you had that time from high school until you went on your mission, and you just said, you know, you knew that you were going to go on a mission. That's a hard time for a lot of people, I think. Some have said that that's why they changed the mission age to being younger, so that there's kind of that continual focus. How did you know you were going to go on a mission?
Well, it was just something that I guess was always expected of me from my parents, and growing up, I didn't really ever think about it. But when that time came, and I started to question it, you know, like, am I really going to go do this? It wasn't that hard of a decision for me, you know, having that background. I wouldn't say at the time that I really fully had a testimony of the church yet, but it's something that I knew I was at least going to, you know, fully go out and try and just kind of, you know, see what happens. So I just made that decision that, yeah, I'm going to go, I'm going to try this, and I'm going to see if it works out. So,
how was it for you? How was the mission?
It was really hard. I went to Oklahoma City Mission.
They're really open to it, right? It's not a lot of Bible thumpers in Oklahoma, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, that whole experience over the 2 years that I was there, it really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff that I never really thought about before, you know, as being part of a human experience. So, you know, things like racism and bigotry and just the kind of hate that people can be capable of. You know, before, those were all just stories on a PBS special, you know, about the 50s and 60s, but that stuff, it still exists out in America, and to be amongst that stuff and see it happen, it really kind of opened my eyes a lot.
Now, was it bigotry and racism towards you as a Mormon in that kind of in that part of the country, or was it racism and bigotry amongst other people?
It was both, really. I mean, the first town that I lived in was Duncan, Oklahoma. Really super small town, and as we rolled into there, there was a town sign there. I don't know if it's still there, and I wish I would have got a picture of it, but it said something along the lines of, welcome to Duncan, Oklahoma. If you're Black, Jewish, or Mormon, get the hell out.
Gosh.
So that was where I lived for the first 3 months or so of my mission.
Wow.
And yeah, so pretty much every day it was things, you know, like getting bottles and rocks thrown at us and sprayed with hoses as we walked by. People would spray us with beer as we knocked on their door and, you know, stuff like that.
Give everybody a time frame of when this was, because you'd think, okay, 40 years ago, maybe, but Dallin is not, you know, 55 years old. How old are you?
I was 19, and this was, I think, 2000.
Jeez.
Year 2000, so not that long ago. But hopefully, you know, things are a little bit different nowadays. It would be nice to think that, but I haven't been back to Oklahoma since then, not even to play a show with Panic on tour or anything.
Really?
I would like to go back and see. Yeah, we just haven't had the chance to roll through yet, but I've always wanted to get back through there. So
coming back to Duncan, Ohio, or Duncan, Oklahoma. What do you guys think of this now, huh? Where's your hatred now?
I'm sure it's, you know, still lying around somewhere.
It's right back there, Dallin. So, And then you saw that towards you. What are some of the bigotry and racism things that you saw amongst the people there?
Well, a couple of those smaller towns that I served in were still segregated, not in any kind of legal way, but, you know, like real estate agents won't sell to, you know, a Black family on this side of whatever property line there is that exists within this town. So they keep it very separate still, kind of finding ways to circumvent these laws, you know, that we have to make sure that, you know, this stuff doesn't happen. But they still do it, you know, it's just sort of part of the culture there still. So it's bizarre to see, but yeah.
How was serving a mission as an artistic person? Although I would never claim that you and I are alike, although maybe. You know, for me, it was really difficult. It felt like it sometimes to be kind of this artistic and creative person, whereas missionary work wasn't always that case.
Yeah, because, you know, you're there to focus your time and efforts on work and stuff. For me, it was incredibly difficult. Like, because music to me, it was always such a very spiritual thing, you know, and to be completely away for it, away from it, was a tough thing to do. And, you know, so whenever, you know, I happen to see a guitar lying around, I would ask if I could pick it up and play it, or I will have to admit that there was a couple times where I broke the rules about no secular music, you know, and I went and snuck off to a music store and listened to Weezer's Green album when it came out.
Yeah.
You know, because it was really, really hard to be away from that part of my life and who I was. You know, I did make the effort to do it, but have to admit I wasn't very perfect.
Was the mission rule no secular music and no musical instruments?
The no musical instruments thing wasn't as hard line rule, but you know, we all knew that the mission president wasn't too keen on it, so I tried to, you know, obey that rule too. And I did good. I think there was a couple times where I may have like borrowed a guitar for a day or two, but you know, just to keep up the chops.
Would you play for like members' wards or firesides and stuff like that? Did you try and use it as a part of the work, or was it just like, and now I'm going to jam out to my favorite Weezer song? Give me 5 minutes. I need a release.
That's what it was. You know, I wish I could say, oh, you know, now I'll play "Come Come Ye Saints" on, you know, this classical guitar for you fine folks. But no, that's not what it was. If I got my hands on a guitar, I was playing, you know, a Nirvana song or something like that. So.
What's your favorite stuff to play? I mean, obviously, Panic at the Disco and Brobeck stuff. Check them out. Get them on iTunes. But other than that.
Well, I will say that I have more fun playing with Panic and playing my own songs than playing covers. But that's not always the case. Like on the last Panic tour, we played Carry On My Wayward Son by Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an incredibly fun song to play. So
if I could travel back in time to Oklahoma around the turn of the millennium, would I see a young Elder Weeks jamming out to Carry On My Wayward Son in some member's household?
No, it probably would have been, let's see, Counting Crows. Man, what else? Maybe some Radiohead. I think, you know, Kid A was coming out around then. What else? You know, I actually have a missionary tag with all of my favorite bands at the time on the back of that tag. Like, I found a label maker. And, you know, missionaries usually put some kind of stickers on the backs of those things.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
But mine, I'm looking in a drawer because I know that I have it still.
Your missionary tag just in a drawer somewhere. That's awesome.
I've got a couple of them. Everyone that I still managed to have by the end of the mission, I still got them.
How has it been? Let me ask you this: as you're kind of looking for it, how has it been? You know, now that you're in Panic at the Disco, and obviously you guys tour not only nationally but internationally, do you have the old thing where companions kind of hit you up and say, "Hey, what's up? How are you?" Remember? And you're like, yeah, I remember we served together for 8 weeks and we hated each other. But now, do you ever have that kind of thing happen?
Well, not really, because of the companions that I had stayed in contact with are the ones, you know, that I got along with, like, really well. And we still sort of talk every once in a while. But, the companions that I didn't like, pretty much right when that companionship was over, I'm sure, like, neither one of us never thought about the other again.
And and isn't that just really about the worst? As I've thought about it, I always like to think that I, you know, could go back and be better about it. But I had 19 companions in the time I was out.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember going, when am I going to get one I like?
Yeah, I would say that the ratio of ones that I liked to ones that I didn't like was pretty much even.
Like, you're lucky.
Served with my favorite companion twice, which was awesome. And I just found that name tag here. I got Beatles, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, The Doors, Neil Young, Beck, Weezer, Ramones.
Motab, is Motab on there?
That's the very last one. Beach Boys, Ben Folds 5, that sort of stuff. So that's what I was super into.
Cool.
Back in the day.
Well, coming back in the third block here of the Cultural Hall, I want to talk to you about just a little bit more about mission work. Maybe I can get you to tell me a mission story. And then I want to talk about what life is like now, being married, you know, being being a Mormon guy and being out on the road and doing all that stuff. So we'll get to that here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sure. Some mission stories. That's what you're after?
Yeah, hang on one sec. Do you have a guitar handy?
I don't at the moment. Okay. I've got a bass hanging up on the wall and a little ukulele, but I'm not too keen on the ukulele yet.
So okay.
Still learning it.
All right. Okay, here we go. Coming down in 3, 2, 1. All right, it is now the third block of the Cultural Hall, and I can't believe I got him to stick around. This is like my my 30-something dream. Is that what we call it? Because it's not my teenage dream because I'm no longer a teenager, but Dallin Weeks from Panic at the Disco from the Brobex. He stuck around for the third break. Now, entertain me. Mission story. Can be spiritual, can be hilarious, can be I can't believe that this happened to me, but I want to hear Elder Weeks. Here we go.
Let's see. Well, I have a lot of I can't believe this happened to me moments. I think that was the majority of my mission, actually. You know, a lot of times where I was just like, where the heck am I?
Like what? Like what?
Well, there was one time in that first town that we were in. I mentioned it before, Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
I think about 4 or 5 weeks into my mission, just one night randomly, there were some, I guess it was a group of like 5 or 6 towns people that came to our apartment that we lived at, probably about 11 o'clock or midnight with some torches in hand, and they'd probably had, you know, one too many to drink or something, but they were just shouting at us Mormons to get out of their town, and we're going to burn down your temple and your church and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Wait. Hold on. They had torches in hand. This is the year 2000, and they're yelling in the middle of the night at your place.
Yeah. and you know, at the time, I don't think that it was even scary at the time, because you could tell that this was just a bunch of drunken bros, you know, sort of there just to, you know, to have a story to tell the next day. So
you know what we should do. You know what we should do.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, they weren't that out there, you know, like exactly maliciously like you see in the movies. You could tell it, like, that's what they were doing, laughing to each other and stuff. This was all some sort of big joke to them. But it was still, you know, like, just what the heck am I seeing right now? Like, really? This is something that exists?
Yeah, it's still a guy on your porch with a torch in the middle of the night in the year 2000,
yeah,
saying, get out of my town.
It was like four or five of them. And it was such a small town that I guaranteed at one point we knocked on one of their doors, you know, and talked to them again at some time in the future. Because I was there for 3 months. I probably knocked on every door in that town twice. but yeah, so that's one exciting tale I got to take home with me.
Give me a spiritual one.
Let's see. All right. Well, there was, when I first went to Oklahoma, the Oklahoma City Temple was being finished. And it was one of the first kind of guided tour temples that the church ever did. And there was a lot of sort of opposition to this temple being built in, you know, the towns that I was in. And one church in particular was going to hold a big meeting. They sent out, you know, flyers and ads in the newspapers. They're going to have a big meeting about this Mormon temple and what it's going to mean for their community. So my companion and I came across one of these flyers and said, well, if they're going to have this big rally about Mormon, there. So we went to the particular church. I think it was a Methodist church. And big crowd of about 200 or 300 people came to see this preacher teach everyone about Mormons and what they believe and, you know, what their temple is. So he got up there and kind of went through basically everything you would expect him to talk about. from, like, if you read just some random anti-Mormon book and took it for face value. Like, I don't think that he was necessarily being malicious about what he was teaching these people, but it really wasn't accurate.
Yeah, it was just ignorance.
But, yeah, exactly. So it was kind of cool that he, you know, noticed that we were there beforehand and kind of introduced himself to us. And as he went through this lesson, he would randomly stop and kind of defer to us on, you know, if what he was teaching in this lesson was accurate or not. And so we would kind of get to say, oh, actually, no, it's not, but here's where that comes from, and here's why, you know, that it's being taught to you this way. So we kind of got to break down all of this, like, anti-Mormon information and tell them where it comes from and then tell them how it really is. And it was actually really cool because we got to basically have a first and second discussion with about 300 people at once.
Which I bet was great for your numbers that week as you report them to your zone leader. You're like, 300 first discussions,
yeah, you know.
150 second discussions.
Come to think of it, I don't think we took advantage of that, that number situation that week. But it went really good. But sort of at the end of that, it was almost going a little bit too good, and the preacher kind of noticed it towards the end, so he kind of backpedaled a little bit on a couple things just at the very end and tried to reiterate that there are some pamphlets all about Mormonism as you walk out the door. Make sure you take them with you. And, you know, they were anti-Mormon pamphlets, too, because there was a company called Utah Missions Incorporated that was running out of that town, and it was just all about, you know, evangelizing to Mormons and just printing up a lot of anti-Mormon stuff and distributing it out through the town and stuff like that. So
that just sounds like ridiculous opposition. Like, I had people that were like, oh, you know, we don't believe it, or, you know, you're trying to add to the Bible. No, thank you. But this sounds like really out to get specifically Mormon people.
Absolutely. And so, I had to learn pretty quick when I got out to, you know, being a missionary, because there were things that people would tell me that I had never heard before. So I spent a lot of nights just not sleeping, but rather, you know, reading church history and things and doctrine and stuff like that, so that I would know what it is I'm talking about when I would go out and teach these people. But it also provided me with an opportunity to learn more about my faith and why I was there, and, you know, it presented an opportunity to really delve into this religion that I was professing to believe in, to have believed in. And then, you know, eventually, I think it was about 3 or 4 months into my mission before I really gained a testimony of the church. You know, because I told you before that I decided I was going to go and so kind of see what happened, but I don't think at the time I could have said that I really had a testimony yet. But, yeah, about 3 or 4 months into my mission, I could say that I did get it. So,
and I think that's cool. I think that's like when they talk about if you have desires to serve, you're called to the work.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I know in my own personal experience, like, I remember, and I think I've told this story before, so you'll hear it for the first time and everyone else will go, oh, yeah, Richie, we've heard it. Let's hear more of Dallin. But when I got to the MTC and they were teaching us about the Book of Mormon and how the Book of Mormon was another testament of Jesus Christ and it took place here on the American continent, I was like, really? That happened here? That was going on here? That's what this book is about, is here on the American continent? So I was, you know, very ignorant.
It's kind of amazing when you think about it. I mean, like, all of these missionaries throughout the world, they're just 19, 20-year-old kids. And what do you know when you're 19 and 20? Like, you don't know anything.
Right, right.
You know? In retrospect, looking back, it's like you're just a, you're still a punk kid, you know? You kind of drop everything about your life and to go out and teach about the church when you're still learning about it yourself. It's kind of crazy.
And I think that's the way that really that we're able to find success and be able to do it is because we, you know, it's almost that we don't know that then we can just, you know, go full-fledged into it and figure the whole thing out.
Hi, this is Lindsay with Sunstone and Sunstone Magazine. I am here to tell you about the exciting new things happening at Sunstone. For 38 years, Sunstone has been the platform for open and frank explorations of Mormonism, both past and present. Much of the scholarship that you and I both benefit from online and in our lived Mormonism has made a stop at one time or another at Sunstone. Every year, Sunstone provides lovers of Mormonism with a gathering place to discuss a wide variety of topics at the Sunstone Symposium. It is coming up super fast and will be held at the University of Utah from July 31st to August 3rd, 2013. You guys, this year is going to be amazing. You don't want to miss it. We have the organizers of the Wear Pants to Church Day event, where they'll be discussing the event and also showing off the pants quilt, which is a quilt made from the pants that people wore on that historic day that the Smithsonian has expressed interest in displaying. There will be workshops on Mormon passive aggression, a panel of real-life 40-year-old virgins. There's going to be tons of panel discussions on scholarship and polygamy. If you've gone through a faith crisis, there are several different choices to choose from to deal with that, whether it be you and your spouse or different places with your faith, or you just don't know how to navigate a faith crisis, or, you know, you did and now you believe, or you did and now you don't believe. All kinds of things. There's going to be panels on the scriptures, looking at the scriptures from one point of view or another. There will be all sorts of Mormons and restorationists there, members of the Community of Christ, the former RLDS, even polygamists. They all come together at this time to get together and discuss Mormonism. It's super awesome. Famed historian Michael Quinn and other notable names in Mormon history and scholarship attend almost every year, and they'll be here this year, and you get to mingle with them. It is so fun. There is also going to be a banquet this year that will feature four hilarious roadshows from the Feminist Mormon Housewives, Writers at Times and Seasons, and the Young Mormon Feminists at BYU. There will also be a steak dance for you and your family. Guys, it's Mormon culture at its finest without having to answer the temple recommend questions. It's like getting dessert and then more dessert and not having to worry about watching your weight. It's awesome. Don't miss the biggest Mormon party of the year. Register now at sunstonemagazine.com. And stay tuned for more exciting changes this year at Sunstone. We'll see you there and enjoy your podcast.
Let me ask you this. How did your mission help you now getting home? Let's pick that up. You got home. You're like, oh, you know what the thing for me is going to Weber State. So you went to school. What were you going to study?
Well, the thing is about that is I absolutely knew that music was what I wanted to do. And, you know, that was my life's goal since I was like 5 years old. So when
I got home, how come? Are your parents musical, or how did you know that from 5 years old?
No. Not at all. No one in my family is. But I just remember being five and driving by like a pawn shop window and there being guitars hanging in there and going, I want one of those. You know, I want to do that. And at the time, I didn't know any bands. I didn't know, you know, anything, really. I just knew that I wanted one of those things that was hanging in the window.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really got the chance to do that until I was like 15, because, you know, it's a waste of time, and if you're going to take music lessons, you're going to take piano lessons.
That's what parents said?
Yeah. So for me, it was like, in retrospect, I wish I would have taken those piano lessons, but at the time, I think it was, well, guitar or nothing, you know?
I'll show you.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was, but at about 15, I spent all my birthday money on a pawn shop guitar and just would spend my time teaching myself to play. But I don't know. I always knew that that's what I wanted to do. So
you get home, but then you went to school. So what were you studying, music in school? Was that the deal?
No. See, I went to school because, you know, that's just what you do. You know, and my family and my grandparents, they all wanted me, you have to go to school. You got to go to school. And
let me ask you this real quick. Was it you have to go to school because you have to get a degree? Okay, your music thing is great, but do you need something to fall back on? Or is it just, you know what,
exactly.
Go to school?
Well, it was, you got to go to school because, you know, music isn't a job. You don't get paid playing music. It's never going to happen. so I kind of went through the motions and went to school because my grandparents, you know, bless their hearts, they put up a bunch of money so that I would actually go to school. They didn't pay my full tuition, but they contributed quite a bit. So I gave it the old college try.
Yeah. Which is actually, this situation is exactly where that phrase comes from. I tried college.
Exactly. But the whole time that I was there, you know, my mind was somewhere else. And, you know, I knew that, you know, I need to be doing what I want to do, or I'm just going to be miserable and going through the motions the whole rest of my life. Like, if I don't stop and give this 100%, then I never know. You never know what's going to happen, you know.
So what did you pretend to study?
Let's see. I did take some classes of things that I was interested in, like poetry and things like that. But we ended up studying Robert Frost, who I'm not a big fan of, unfortunately. Like, that was basically what the whole class was about, is just the poetry of Robert Frost. So that was kind of a bummer, but did take a couple art classes and math and things like that, but nothing that I could say that I was super into.
I can see your grandparents going, "Listen, we're not keeping you away from music for you to study poetry, pal."
Oh man, I think let's see. At the time, I think I remember saying something like, "Oh well." Something along the lines of, like, forensic science was interesting to me. So I think I was sort of, you know, saying that at the time, like, just to keep everyone happy and off my back about doing music. Because, like, that was, any time that nobody was looking, I've always had some kind of plan to, you know, get in a van and start touring the country and just, you know, and doing that. And I think eventually after doing college for that long, I kind of just fessed up to that desire, told everyone, look, you know, I tried it. It's not for me. I absolutely know what I'm supposed to be doing with my time. So I'm going to go do that.
Was there an experience that made you just stop all of a sudden? Like one day you woke up and you were late for a final and just went, you know what, this is not what I want. Was there an experience, or was it just finally like, I'm done?
Well, the moment actually came while playing shows with my band, the Robecks, because that is something that I would do while I went to school, but it was more spare time sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we would play shows randomly here and there, and it was fun, but ultimately, you know, we would be playing for like 5 or 6 people. And we did that for a good maybe 3 months or so, and then all of a sudden, you know, people start showing up to these shows that we're playing. And I remember playing a full house at this venue called Kilby Court in Salt Lake City. For the first time, you know, people were actually coming to see my band play. And the feeling that came along with that was just something that, it was really like a kick, you know, just something that said, well, this is what I need to be doing,
mm-hmm.
You know. This is awesome. So it kind of motivated me to make some blind decisions about school and about what I'm going to spend my time pursuing. So
then you're done.
So it was hard too, but it ended up working out.
So what is that like then? You're like, okay, I'm not going to do it to school. So you go to the band and be like, okay, I'm done with school. Is everyone else on board?
Everyone was, except for our keyboard player at the time, and we sort of tried to tour the country and kind of, you know, make sure that he could still go to school and stuff. So we would take a week here and a week there. But ultimately, I think a few lineup changes happened because of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're 20-something years old, you know, a lot of these guys you're playing music with are still figuring out exactly what they want to do, and sometimes it was music, and sometimes they weren't sure if it was music, so they'd try it for a while and then decide it wasn't for them, or, you know, things like that sort of happened. So personality clashes and things like that, you end up playing with different people over the course of time.
So then how did it happen that you ended up with Panic at the Disco?
Well, with Brobecks, we did pretty good. I mean, there was definitely some label interest as time progressed, and we got a few offers, but nothing that was really worth taking, you know, especially considering that I had a family and stuff like that, and a small baby at the time. But we ended up on the radar of a few different labels, and one of them was Fueled by Ramen. That's Panic at the Disco's label. And so whenever they had members that quit their band, I got into contact with John Janik, who was the head of Fueled by Ramen, because they needed a bassist for this tour that they were doing with Blink-182.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me if I wanted to go try out for the tour, and it was just going to be like a month or two long thing. And at that time, the Brobecks was sort of winding down at the same time. Like, we had hit this plateau and seemed to be on that same sort of level for a long time. Like, that next step, it just wasn't coming.
Yeah.
So, I took that chance. So I went down to California and met the Panic at the Disco guys and just kind of hung out and played a few songs. And I got the job for the tour and went really good. And they continued to use me for shows that would come up. And I think eventually they just kind of, you know, asked me to join the fold.
Were you intimidated on the sign on the sign on the Panic at the Disco bus that said, "If you're Black, Jewish, or Mormon, don't apply to be in this band"?
Luckily, that sign stayed in Oklahoma. So.
Oh, good, good.
You know, Brendan, the singer, he was actually raised Mormon. His family still is Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he kind of understood the background that I have and that sort of thing.
Was that any sort of connection for the two of you guys? I mean, I'm of the belief that if you're Mormon, maybe more than different religions, you're kind of always Mormon, even if you're not Mormon anymore.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because there's cultural Mormonism, which is, you know, a separate thing from, you know, the faith, but that sort of cultural aspect of the faith sticks with you, I think. So Brendan and I sort of connected on that common ground, you know. And religion is something that we still talk about, like, a lot, you know. It comes up on a pretty regular basis. And something I love talking about. It's something they love talking about for, you know, different reasons, of course. I think everyone in the band is atheist except for me.
Yeah.
But it's cool because, you know, they're super respectful and intelligent guys, and that's something that I can always appreciate. Like, I really don't care what any believes as long as you're not, like, a jerk about it, you know?
Yeah.
That's really the only thing that counts.
You mean like, let them worship how, where, or what they may? That kind of thing?
That sort of crazy idea, yeah.
Hmm, I don't know where I've heard that, but that is an interesting suggestion.
Did you just come up with that?
That's no. No. Not an original R. Stedman. So I want to entertain this with you, because I've thought that this is cool, and I've visited with a few artists here in the Cultural Hall. I would love to create a Mormon supergroup for one show.
Dude, I have fantasized about that on more than one occasion.
So who would be in your Mormon supergroup? Because I've kind of got my pick.
Well, you know, the Neon Trees are good friends. I've always wanted to do some kind of collaboration with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, you got your brother Flowers from the
yep.
Killers.
That yep.
That would be a good spot to fill.
And I recently interviewed, had a chance to talk to Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragons, who's also of the faith.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, I thought it would be fun to have, you know, you and then Brandon and Tyler from Brandon, Tyler and Elaine from Neon Trees, and then Brandon Flowers, and just have this big rockin' band of Mormons and have it be called Choose the Rock, and have it be just this awesome concert of awesomeness. So anything
that would be so fun. I would so be into that. Sign me up for any time that goes on, you can count me in.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that, and I recorded that, so when that ends up happening.
That's legally binding.
I'm totally into that. That's legally. That's a contract signed in words right there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So tell me about your wife. Tell me about your family. Is that fun? Is that hard? Is that?
It's so good. It's my favorite thing. And
That's not very very rock star-ish of you to have your family be your favorite thing.
Oh, actually, I don't think there's much of anything rock star-ish about me. When you think about it, but you know, it used to be before I met my wife and before I had a family that the most important thing for me to pursue is music, you know, and that was at the top of the list. And as you know, I had a family, and then I also got my dream job to happen. They just naturally switched. I sort of realized that music and doing this job, as fun as it is and as much as I wouldn't trade it for anything, it's not the most important thing that's in my life. Hmm. And having a happy family is, you know, it's... And that might sound weird to some people, but it's been the most, like, natural transition for me as those two things have sort of developed at the same time.
So you got two kids now, more kids in the future?
Yeah. No, I think we're done.
Good.
And, as much as I love my kids, they're certainly a handful. And as often that, you know, I'm gone on tour and things like that, I just don't think that I could do that to my wife, you know, give her more to deal with on a solo basis.
Does she ever come out on tour with you?
She does. She'll come in and visit, you know, a day or two, which is awesome. But tour and being on tour isn't really all that it's cracked up to be in people's imaginations. It's a lot of waiting around and, you know, riding on buses and planes and things like that.
I imagine it to be
a lot of monotony.
Yeah, to be just terrible. A lot of hurry up and wait. A lot of screaming, a lot of, okay, now we have to shuffle you here, now we have to shuffle you there. It's not just go to town, hang out in the town until you play in your band, then get done, then go back and hang out.
A lot of people think that that's what it is, you know. It's rock and roll all night and party every day, you know, as they say.
You should write that song.
but that's really not what it is. You know, again, the reality is far less interesting from the fictional ideas that people have, but yeah, it's, you put up with a lot of monotony just so you can have that hour or two on stage. It makes it worth it if you're a musician, you know, if that's what you are into, if that's what you live for, then all of that sort of boring and terrible stuff is what you put it up with just so that you can get that time on stage, and it makes it all worth it, you know.
Do you have a calling in your ward right now?
I don't. I'm gone often enough that I guess you could say that I'm less active. But we try to go whenever I'm home and we can pull it off, you know.
You ever go to church out on the road?
No. I don't think that's really something that we could ever find the time to do, especially with a cast and crew of atheists.
Yeah.
You know.
Hang on, guys. I'll be right back. Give me 3 hours.
Yeah, could we pull the bus over for 3 hours so I can go to church? I got my scriptures on my phone all the time. I'll always hop into my bunk and do some reading and stuff like that. So.
Oh, that's cool. What if you could pick a calling, though? If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that maybe doesn't exist, what would you pick for yourself?
Oh, man, some kind of teaching position I think would be awesome.
Kids or adults?
I love to do it. Maybe teenagers.
Yeah.
I think, because that's a good time. I think a lot of, you know, the kids are starting to make decisions about what they want, and you know, religion is a big one. And I think that, you know, at the time when I was 15 and 16, there would be some things that I could have benefited to know and learn from. And I think it would be cool to try my hand at that.
Nice. Now, final question before I let you go. Well, actually, there will be two more questions, but this is one of the last final. Great, now all this set up. What is your favorite part of your faith?
I guess just the knowledge that comes with it, you know, not only about, you know, the afterlife and, you know, things like that, but things that you can apply to your temporal situation, you know, to your family, things that can improve your outlook on where you are and things like that. And I'm really appreciative of that aspect of my faith.
Cool. Let me ask you this. We ask people to climb up on the Ramyumptum and let people know where they can get in touch with you, where they can get your music, where they can find you, where all that stuff. So go ahead.
All right. Well, if you're after Brobeck stuff, and you're probably my mom or grandma, and you already know where you can find it. But if you're curious to check it out, then there's a Bandcamp page, which I think is thebrobecks.bandcamp.com. And if you're interested in Panic at the Disco stuff, that's a little bit easier to find. You can probably just Google that name or go to the band's website or YouTube or wherever.
Do you have a Twitter that you yourself do?
I do. It's just Dallin Weeks, at Dallin Weeks.
And then Facebook, do you have a fan page that people can reach out to?
I think there is one for the Brobecks. My wife kind of runs it because I try to stay away from the Facebook because it's just awful. That's just my two cents. But yeah, I think there is a Brobecks Facebook page.
And then I happen to know that there's a Panic at the Disco one. You can go and like that. And then what's coming up?
I do know that there's one too.
Is there a new album anytime soon, or are you guys touring the United States, or what's going on for Panic?
Well, as we speak, we are trying to finish up an album, but I think by the time this airs, it will have already come out. So we may be touring America by the time this hits the airwaves, I'm guessing.
Nice. Here in Salt Lake, I hope.
I certainly hope so, too. We've only managed to roll through there once, and we didn't get to do our full show because Brendan, our singer, was sick that day. So really want to get back out there and give it the full deal.
Cool. Well, Dallin, anything else? Did I miss anything?
No, man, I appreciate you doing this. You know, it's nice to be able to talk about my Mormonism and things like that. I don't often get a chance to do that in a public way, but I'm always happy to do it. So I appreciate you.
Cool, thank you so much.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Culture Hall show.